Hello there. My name is James. I'm the pastor of the Glenwood Moravian Community Church here in Madison, Wisconsin. And this is The Essentials. It's our podcast where we explore topics of faith, discuss what's happening in the world, and hopefully celebrate some good news that we can cling to. We are back after a little bit of a break. I was away on paternity leave as my wife and I welcomed our first baby into the world. And now settling back into the office, been back preaching for a few weeks. And this will be the first one I get back up on the podcast to hopefully keep the routine going now that we're back in rhythm. So this is our lesson and our message from Sunday, June 2nd. The first scripture reading came from the book of Deuteronomy, there's chapter 5. Verses 12 through 15, when we used the Living Bible translation. Keep the Sabbath day holy. This is my command. Work the other 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. No work should be done on that day by you or by any of your household, your sons, daughters, servants, oxen, donkeys, or cattle. Even foreigners living among you must obey this law. Everyone must rest as you do. Why should you keep the Sabbath? It's because you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out with a great display of miracles. And moving to our gospel lesson, we read from the Gospel of Mark, starting in chapter 2 with verse 23, and continue to chapter 3, verse 6. Another time on a Sabbath day, as Jesus and his disciples were walking through the fields, the disciples were breaking off heads of wheat and eating the grain. Some of the Jewish religious leaders said to Jesus, "They shouldn't be doing that. It's against our laws to work by harvesting grain on the Sabbath." But Jesus replied, "Didn't you ever hear about the time King David and his companions were hungry, and he went into the house of God? Abiathar was the high priest then. And they ate the special bread only priests were allowed to eat. That was against the law, too. But the Sabbath was made to benefit man, not man to benefit the Sabbath. And I, the Messiah, have authority to decide what men can do on Sabbath days." While in Capernaum, Jesus went over to the synagogue again and noticed a man there with a deformed hand. Since it was the Sabbath, Jesus' enemies watched him closely. Would he heal the man's hand? If he did, they planned to arrest him. Jesus asked the man to come and stand in the front of the congregation. Then, turning to his enemies, he asked, "Is it all right to do kind deeds on Sabbath days? Or is this a day for doing harm? Is it a day to save lives or to destroy them?" But they wouldn't answer him. He looked around at them angrily, for he was deeply disturbed by their indifference to human need. He said to the man, "Reach out your hand." He did. Instantly, his hand was healed. At once, the Pharisees went away and met with the Herodians to discuss plans for killing Jesus. Here ends the reading of our word. So Jesus has two interesting discussions about the Sabbath, as we heard in our gospel for today. The first, as his disciples walk through a field of grain and pick and eat what they find, angering those who witness it. And then again in the synagogue, as Jesus heals a man's hand in front of a large crowd. And in each instance, the religious authorities ask Jesus, what permission or right does he have to do this on the Sabbath day? That he's breaking the Sabbath law by doing these things. And in response, Jesus questions how they interpret the meaning of the Sabbath. He wonders if the Sabbath is maybe more complex than the black or white lens they are looking at it through. So he asks, was the Sabbath designed as a day for people to go hungry? Should we be allowed to eat and feed ourselves even on the Sabbath day? And then was it designed as a day that we rest from doing good things? That if an opportunity to serve or help someone comes up and it happens to be the Sabbath day, Should we ignore their need to honor the rules of the Sabbath? And he's not saying that the Sabbath isn't important. He's not saying it's something that shouldn't be valued, but he's saying that sometimes when we are so intent on following our rules, the regulations that we live by, if following them so closely means that we are missing out on opportunities to be helpful and to be loving, maybe we need to reevaluate our relationship with those rules. That it's always the right time to do something good, even if it means breaking a rule or a law that's in place. And his approach might make us think of many times in history when people broke the rules or the laws of their day in order to produce something good. Famous examples could be Harriet Tubman repeatedly breaking the law as she freed slaves via the Underground Railroad. We think of Rosa Parks and others who broke laws of segregation to speak out against racial injustice. And that's not to say that following the Sabbath compares to their circumstances, but it makes the same point in saying that sometimes doing something good, producing something hopeful, means leaving the rules we have behind, even if just for a moment. There's been a new set of rules that I've been introduced to over the last couple of months as we care for a newborn at home. There are regulations and guidelines given to you to help keep baby happy and healthy, to establish good practices. And I respect these rules. I see their value and their importance. But as I live into this new experience, as I try to enforce these rules, you begin to understand that maybe they aren't meant to be followed 100% of the time. Maybe they don't apply to each and every scenario without question. Like the one rule that says that your baby shouldn't sleep in your arms at night because then they'll never get used to sleeping in the bassinet. But those few first couple of weeks at home, our baby only would sleep in our arms. So we decided we'll take turns sitting with him on the couch as he sleeps to help him get his days and his nights figured out. It was worth breaking that rule to get him some sleep. Or the rule that says you should allow baby to self-soothe sometimes. Don't always swoop in and pick him up the moment he starts crying. Then you hear those cries for help, the need that he has. And as his parent, you feel it's your job to be there. Or a rule that says that babies need to eat every 2 to 3 hours, even over the night. But then the night comes and he's finally in a deep, deep sleep. And feeding him would mean waking him up from this slumber. So you decide to let him sleep for an extra hour because that would be better for all involved to catch up on some sleep. The rules mean well. The rules provide great structure, but there should be some flexibility. There should be some time to consider maybe there's an opportunity for something else to happen that gives us life and gives us energy. And maybe we can set those rules aside for a moment. On the first Sunday of the month, we partake in communion at our church. It's one of the two sacraments in the Moravian Church, along with baptism. And as we think about those two sacraments, you might be surprised at the lack of rules that we have as we practice them. The list of non-essentials about their practice is much longer than the list of things we need to have to be involved. We encourage congregations to find what's important and meaningful to them and lean into it in their context and their setting. Some of the non-essentials, some of the rules that we leave open-ended. As we think about baptism, you can baptize someone through the baptismal font by sprinkling water on their forehead. You can also go to a body of water and practice full immersion. We baptize infants, we baptize adults. For communion, it can be bread, it can be a wafer for the element, it can be wine, it can be grape juice. Doesn't have to be Welch's, but it's highly recommended to be Welch's grape juice. There's no rules on how often you're supposed to take communion. Churches are meant to find what works best for them. But we do have a few rules on who can partake, who can be involved in these sacraments. It's written in our Book of Order as we think about baptism to give us some instruction on who we baptize at church. And the language is pretty clear that the person being baptized, whether it's an infant, whether it's an adult, this person will become a part of the life of this congregation. If it's an infant, they'll go on to attend worship and Sunday school, eventually taking confirmation classes so they can affirm their faith. If it's an adult, they will become a part of the fellowship of the church. They will be involved in the ministry. That's what's written in our Book of Order as who we seek to baptize. A few years ago, I was approached by an old high school friend who had moved close-ish to the church that I was serving. COVID had hit, they moved, and all of a sudden he realized he and his wife at home, they had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old who hadn't been baptized yet. So he reached out and asked if I would baptize his daughters. So I went to our joint board, the body that leads our congregation, and I shared with them this proposal, this request. And we dove into the Book of Order and asked, what are the rules about this? And we saw the pretty clear language that said this people being baptized should be part of the congregation. And I acknowledged to them the reality that I don't think we'll be able to meet those requirements. I can hope with all my heart that they'll become part of this church. But I told our board that there's a very good chance we will baptize TJ's little girls and we'll never see them again. So we wrestled with what to do. Do we break the rules and baptize them, or do we see these requirements as something that keeps us from doing so? We decided to baptize his girls, even if it meant breaking those rules. We decided to lean on the side of grace and say, what harm are we doing by opening our doors? What damage could we be doing by introducing 2 young lives into the community of faith that maybe we won't see them grow up and see their lives of faith mature, but maybe we can be part of planting a seed that will grow. After we baptized his girls, we didn't see TJ's family again, but we don't know where their journey will lead, what their faith will look like in the future. And maybe we could have played a small part in starting something that could grow in the future. It meant breaking that letter of the law in our Book of Order, but it felt like something we were willing and wanted to do. As we think about communion, I say every time we partake in communion and worship, I describe the open table that we have. In our Book of Order, we have rules on who can partake in communion. It says that baptized members of this congregation are welcome at the table, and members of other Christian denominations as well. That's who the communion table is set for. And I have not once used those words in worship. I've been ordained for nearly 6 years now, and I have never invited only Christians to the table. My explanation of the open table is that this table is set for all, any who wish to receive this gift from Jesus. You could have gone to church for 90 years. You could be walking into a sanctuary for the first time in your life. If you feel that Jesus is extending this gift to you and you want to receive it, you should be able to do so. So for once a month, I have broken that rule. Not to be a rebel, not to cause trouble, but because it feels like what Jesus would have us do. And because I've broken that rule, guests and visitors who, according to the letter of our law, wouldn't be allowed to accept the gift have been offered the opportunity to be included. They've been offered a seat at the table when, based on our rules, they wouldn't be allowed to do so. So, friends, as we continue through our lives of faith within our congregations, as we interact with our world and our society, there are many rules and regulations at play. And we need to discern what influence they have in our lives, what level of respect they deserve from us. As we think about those rules, those norms, and those customs, it's important to consider if following them, if keeping in line with those rules causes us to exclude someone, causes us to mistreat someone, causes us to ignore the needs that someone might have. If following the rules takes us to a place where we are ignoring an opportunity to serve and love, then maybe we need to reevaluate the hold that rule has on our life. That we shouldn't be so concerned with meeting the standards and customs if it means excluding or hurting someone else. And when we wrestle with those rules, when we wrestle with if it's time to step away from them or break them to include someone or bring them in, we might remember the greatest rule, the greatest commandment that Jesus gives us to follow. And that's to love each other as he loved us. That is the rule we base our lives on. And when the guidelines in our world keep us from doing that, we need to have the courage to step away from those rules and see the commandment given from Jesus to be people of love. That's the most important thing in our lives. Amen. Well, thank you for listening to another episode. It's good to be back with you all. We hope to get these up weekly now that I am back into the rhythm of ministry with baby Silas in our lives. If you want to learn more about the church that I serve, go to glenwoodmoravian.org, find us on Facebook, join us for worship on YouTube. And you can learn more about the Moravian Church by going to moravian.org. So take care, be well. I'll catch you next time.